Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. You know, February is Heart Awareness Month, and on the show today, we're going to take a different spin on heart health, your heart health, by talking about love. Shyla Morgain back with us. Always great to have her come by. She's a distinguished psychologist, clinical assistant professor in the Department of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation. She's at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. She does a lot of speaking. She's written a lot. She's a facilitator and a therapist. So who better to have come in and talk about love and how it affects your heart than Shyla Morgain? Shyla, welcome, by the way. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I just love being here today, Larry.
Well, you do love to be here. All right. We'll talk about different meanings for love in just a second here. But as you listen to us talk, what about you? Has finding more love in your life kept you healthier? How'd you do it? We'd like to hear from you, and you can call in for sure at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can do that as well. We'd certainly love to hear from you. It's always great to hear what you have to say. Well, Shyla, talking about love today, and you know, that word really describes a lot of, or has a lot of different meanings. You know, I love my baseball mitt. And I love my golf clubs, especially the driver, because I can hit that really well. But then there are people I love too. And so, but I'm sure that there's a different feeling, a context for the word love.
Yeah.
In just those few things.
It definitely can be, but maybe not, depending on how much you love your golf game. And our hearts are in trouble when we look at statistics of heart disease being the leading cause of death for women and men. And it's costly, too. About one in every six U.S. healthcare dollars is spent on cardiovascular disease. So when we talk about love, we think about the heart, and the heart is the most power generator in the body. When we think about the function of the heart, it pumps blood to our 75 trillion cells throughout the body.
Ooh, and 75 trillion.
Yeah, and on average, the average human heart will beat 2.5 billion times in its lifetime, and our heartbeats have value. And one of the ways that our heart really can get healthier is by expanding our capacity for love. Because when you think about the golf game that you just mentioned, or the friend, and think about the love, where you sense that is actually in the heart. And we'll talk about cultivating heart love for our heart as really fostering better heart health.
So love physically is good for your heart.
It is. There are studies that show that if we're around a loved one, it will lower our blood pressure. It's a protective factor for a variety of conditions, including heart disease. And the biggest contributor to long life, longevity, and health in life is having good social support around you where you feel valued and loved. But the reality is that loneliness is an epidemic in our culture. We're becoming more disconnected. And time again in my clinical office, I hear people really longing for companionship, longing for tenderness, care, compassion. You know, we're really longing to be seen and loved. And so I want to talk about ways we can cultivate it for ourselves, but also in our relationships, in the workplace, in the world.
Yeah, that's a lot to talk about in 40 minutes or so, but let's talk. You gave me four ways to increase a sense of love in your life before this show. So let's talk about some of them. And one of them has to do with living more fully, living life more fully with an open heart.
Yeah. And I always say change works inward and then we go outward. And so when we think about an open heart, I often think about it as just cultivating more self-love, self-appreciation, self-compassion. And again, there's a lot of research that shows when we do this, this really fosters better health outcomes, and we actually stay stress resilient. So if we think about, if we go through our typical day and the slings and arrows of life come at us, what can happen is that we crumble under that pressure and we start to get really self-critical, or we start to have social comparison with others and not feel enough. And we know stress is a contributing factor to conditions like heart disease. So when we cultivate more self-love, one, looking at our self-talk and trying to be kinder to ourselves. Two, just doing a simple mindfulness practice of bringing to mind a time where we felt cared for. Could be with a pet. It could be a time on the golf course mm-hmm. with our caddy. It could be with a friend. But just the act of remembering that moment of care, compassion, and kindness provides a safety net. So instead of spiraling downward into that self-criticism, anxiety, depression, stress, it provides a bit of that safety net so we stay resilient and we can provide for ourselves that own care and kindness, kind of like we're generating our own warmth for ourselves versus just being dependent on others.
So if you're feeling in a kind of a bad way, a good thing to do then, as I hear you say, is think about something, a loving thing or something that you love or an experience that you had.
Yeah, remembering a moment of simple kindness, care that you received. It could be from a pet or even in nature or a loved one. And if nothing's coming to mind, you might even think about a time where you cared for somebody else and then see about trying to offer that to yourself and really pay attention to the way you're speaking to yourself. If we spoke to others the way we speak to ourselves, they sometimes might run in the other direction. And we can be so hard on ourselves, and it can be really hard to stop beating ourselves up. And so instead, just simply thinking about what you would say to somebody else if they're going through that, and then offer that same wording to yourself. And if nothing else, I think even just a simple gesture of touch can be helpful. Holding your hand, giving yourself a hug, holding your arm, that act of physical caring can mm-hmm. also really help lower stress and help us stay resilient and have a more balanced outlook as we're going throughout the day.
You know, and kind of in the Midwest, we're the kind of people, we don't like to sort of blow our own horn or talk very positively about ourselves. I mean, do you see that?
I do, yeah. And there's definitely some benefit to humility, of not being overly arrogant. But I think it can also be hard to share those good things with others that we don't want to seem boastful or stand out. And so, you know, another way of expressing and receiving love is just sharing the new and good in our lives. We actually just did this in a group yesterday at UW Health where we had people talk for 5 minutes about the new and good stuff in their life. And at the end of the 5 minutes, each person there in groups of twos. At the end, everyone was exuberant, just saying how good it felt and how happy their heart was.
Oh, well, we have callers online to join in our conversation. What about you? You may have a question. Have you increased love in your life, or what are the benefits of love for you? Other comments? Give a call at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. And let's go to Vivian in Green Bay. Vivian, hi. Thanks a lot for calling. What's on your mind?
I have some questions about compounded losses. And like everyone else, I've lost my parents, brother, nieces, my husband 17 years ago. But I've always been an animal lover and owner, and they just don't live long enough. And in the last 10 years, I would say I've probably lost 7 animals, and I still currently have animals who keep me from being lonely, and I have a good friendship structure also. But the losses are difficult of those pets even, and it happens so frequently. I just wonder how the compounded losses affect someone's heart.
Well, Shyla, what do you think?
Well, first, Vivian, I'm so sorry for your losses. And pets, they provide a special kind of affection and care and love that goes beyond sometimes what humans can offer, that unconditional regard or love that a pet provides. So 7 pets, that is tough. And compounded grief really brings up the complexity of grieving. And I think it's a process. It's not just a switch that you turn on and off. And so recognizing some of the stages of grieving, that there can be some disbelief, anger, sadness, even worry, all of that is that pathway to acceptance. So I think there are three things that I would say. One is just to, you know, be kind to yourself, and the moments of grief may arise in unexpected times, kind of like a geyser of emotion can burst. Two, hopefully you're comforted by the memory of the times that you did have. Sometimes those reminders of photographs or videos or even talking to somebody about the experiences you had can alleviate some of that grief. And then three, knowing that they can't be replaced, but also trying to bring in life. Sometimes with grief, we can get stuck in those stages of anger or sadness, and we stop living life. You know, we kind of get stuck in the past. So it's so important to keep moving forward, and even thinking about what, if your animals could talk to you, or those loved ones who have passed away, if they could offer some words of wisdom, what would they want for your life now? You know, my sense is they would probably want you to fully live and fully express your love. And I think when we have an open heart, the risk is that it hurts. It hurts when we lose people, you know, and that heartbreak can be, there's, you know, broken heart syndrome is a form of a heart attack, that when somebody goes through a significant loss, they sometimes can be vulnerable to that broken heart syndrome and having a heart attack. So just to, you know, to recognize that, but also to live, you know, I often say it's better to live more wide open heart. And it, you want to be safe and protected with that, but to, you know, keep living life fully and maybe even in service of your pets.
And thinking about those fun times you maybe are, the loving times you may have had with, you know, with your husband, for example. I think you were talking, sort of getting to that as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. The relatives, the husband, those memories. Yeah. Keeping his memory or legacy alive, even in what you are doing. Maybe you're donating to charity on his behalf or helping a friend of his.
I was thinking about times I was at a funeral recently. And one of the things I've noticed at funerals is that it really helps to, I always try to have a story or two to tell the people who that are still living, a good story about the person, and as often as I can, something that would make them laugh. And hope, I always hope that that's something that they remember, and that can, I think, can be helpful.
Very much so, Larry. That's something that I recommend, to personalize your memory of the person, even put it in writing that they can read from time to time. And often it's, you know, when there is a funeral, there's a lot of care and compassion that's provided, but it's often 6 months later or a year later, that anniversary where it's toughest. So also encouraging people to reach out at those times to provide that care.
Thanks very much for calling. I appreciate your call. And you can join in, too. What has increased love in your life? What are the benefits of love for you? What questions you have about increasing the sense of love in your life? Give a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Dave Potratz, our engineer today, Jill Nadeau, our producer, and our guest, Shyla Merghain, distinguished psychologist and clinical assistant professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, here on the Ideas Network. Well, February is Heart Month, and we're talking about love being good for your heart. I'm Larry Mueller. My guest, Shyla Merghain, distinguished psychologist, clinical assistant professor in the Department of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation at the UW-Madison. Great to have her along. Questions for you, I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Well, we started talking about four ways to increase love in your life. We talked about the first one, which is living life more fully. The next practice is love for your body. That can be pretty difficult in today's society. We see a lot of perfect bodies on TV and in the movies and my body doesn't look too perfect, to be perfectly honest. But what about love for, what does that mean, love for your body?
Yes, and Larry, I've yet to meet a person who's completely satisfied with their body, and body shaming, body criticism is really at an all-time high, I think, and part of what you mentioned, all the images out there that are unrealistic. And part of Heart Awareness Month is really working on having a healthy body with good nutrition, good exercise, doing enjoyable activities for the body. And I think at the core of that is really more self-love. We tend to be motivated with those things when we have a greater appreciation and respect and are kinder to our body. And I often like to remind people of just all that the body does that we sometimes stop thinking about. You know, we are, as I said, we have 50 to 75 trillion cells in the body. Our nose can smell 50,000 different scents and can distinguish between that. An adult heart pumps more than a gallon of blood per minute, which is amazing. And over the lifetime, it's 1 billion barrels of blood in an average lifetime, which is can fill up more than 1,500 Olympic-sized swimming pools. So. Ooh. There's a lot that our body does just naturally that we don't have to think about. And our body's our trusted companion. You know, it's been there since the beginning. It'll be there till the end. And so we think about, how am I caring for my body? And is there a way I can be a little less harsh and show more appreciation from, my body allowed me to walk here. My body allowed me to digest food. My body allows me to see. And so a simple practice of just thanking the body, expressing gratitude for the body. Mm-hmm. It can be when you wake up in the morning, you know, putting on some lotion now that the season is dry, and just saying, thank you, body, for what you're doing. If you're a parent, you might even express appreciation for what your body does, the function of your body in front of your kids. So focusing more on the function versus the form. At the end of the night, around the dinner table, you might even share one thing you're grateful for that your body did today. And again, you're changing that loop of criticism, I'm not enough, it's not good enough, I need to lose weight, all of that, into, gosh, this remarkable body. That, and I think it helps us be more embodied versus this frustration with it.
And I kind of like your comment about doing something good for your body. So I have this a little ritual of running 3 miles in the morning, and if I don't do it, like we've had some really icy sidewalks the last couple of weeks, and so I have not been at all regular, and actually I don't feel as good about myself but I know that if I went out there and broke my ankle, I rationalize it that way.
Yeah, you're staying smart with the exercise. Yeah, and when you do have that focus on love of the body, it makes it much more easy to get out and exercise or hydrate well with water or eat more nutritious food.
We have, before we go back to the phones, there's another area, well, there's a couple more areas, but one was love with relationships. What kind of relationships are you getting at here?
Really all kinds of relationships.
Okay.
Thinking about, how am I relating to people? Do I tend to get really critical or closed off or withdrawn? Or am I showing appreciation, warmth, and kindness and compassion? And part of what prompted me to think about this, when I was in my 20s, I met the Dalai Lama at his palace in India. And it was a very brief moment. It probably lasted no more than a minute. But when I stood in front of him to get a blessing, there was so much warmth and kindness and compassion and love that radiated from him. It sent like shockwaves through me, and I actually burst into tears and cried. There was such generosity just in his presence. And I think, you know, we're so rushed in the U.S., we hardly look at each other when we're passing each other on the street. We can live next to our neighbors and not know much about them, or even go through our workplaces too busy to ask somebody how their weekend was. So simple things, and in particular, I just want to talk about gratitude, just sharing appreciation, what you're thankful for. Write a letter to somebody you haven't properly thanked. In the grocery store, when somebody's checking you out, say thank you, wish somebody a good day, let somebody know why they're important to you. And there are two barriers to people doing this. We know gratitude is good for our health, but there are two barriers. Number one, people feel that they don't have the skill set, they don't have the right words, they don't have exactly what they're the right thing to say, so they don't. And what people instead really appreciate with a thank you is the warmth and the intention. And then two, people underestimate the impact that gratitude has on others. They say, oh, it's not going to really mean very much, when actually it can really make somebody's day. So it can really boost somebody or really help somebody. So
I try to make it, well, I do every, when I walk down the street, I smile at everybody. I'll sometimes even say something to somebody I don't know. Just, I mean, a word, not, but it's amazing. People can be going along with a kind of a, not, maybe a scowl or neutral face. And if you smile at them, they'll smile back. And you have to know, you have to think that that's going to make people feel better.
Absolutely, because even if you fake a smile, that boosts your mood and builds some positivity, and there's a ripple effect, I think, with that kind of thing.
Well, we can take some calls here. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Samantha in Whitehall, let's go to you. Hi, Samantha.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Great show. Anyway, I've had a love-hate relationship with food all my life. I've been really skinny. I've been obese. I've been everything. And now I feel like I'm always counting calories, always, you know, checking to see if I've gained weight or lost weight. And I'm 27 pounds, but I'm obsessing that I'm just too big for 5'1". And I just feel like, how can I get that out of my head and eat healthier and know that, you know, I don't want to go down any dangerous road of getting anorexic or anything, but, you know, I just, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So. Thank you for calling, Samantha. Shiloh, comments?
Samantha, thanks for sharing, and you're certainly not alone in that love-hate relationship with food. It can be really challenging because, again, there's so much media around food, and we use food for so many different reasons, including celebration and when we're stressed. But I think mindful eating can be a really helpful practice. Before you sit down to eat, taking a mindful pause, taking a few deep breaths, and then really being present while you're eating and noticing the texture, the flavor, the temperature, the taste of the food can really allow you to really savor what you're eating. And they find when you do that mindful pause and you're really mindfully eating, you tend to have a slower pace. And if you can slow yourself down, they say it takes about 20 minutes from the first bite to the time that your stomach registers that you're eating and you're full. So if you can slow down your pace, you tend to not eat as much. And again, when you're eating, to really foster some of that healthy body awareness of noticing, again, what foods your body likes, how you feel after you eat certain things. Even when you're mindfully noticing taste, you might notice some of those artificial, highly processed foods don't actually taste very good. And then lastly, when those thoughts come up, those thoughts can be sticky or hook us, the thoughts around calorie counting and, oh, am I gaining weight? And you can simply notice the thought and then think about choosing a second thought. And in particular, a self-compassionate thought. There was a study that showed when people fostered greater self-compassion, they actually were more successful in losing weight, and that weight stayed off. So the first thought may be the obsession with calorie counting, but the second thought can be, oh, I'm doing okay. You know, let me put this in perspective. This is just one meal, and let me just make a wise choice or a mindful choice about what to eat today. And if I mess up, it's going to happen, but I always have the opportunity to get back on track. And that fosters a much healthier, more sustainable relationship with food in our body, where we're really using food to nourish us.
Thanks very much for that call. Let's take another call. Robin and Gaze Mills will go to you. Hi, Robin.
Hi, good morning. And I wanted to tell you a little story about my grandson, actually. And in 2015, my partner committed suicide, and I crashed. I had broken heart syndrome. I had to be med-flighted to Madison. I was so sad, as you can imagine. And my son brought my little grandson in to see me. And he climbed up on my bed, and he was about two, And he said, he put his hands on my heart and he said, "I'm healing your heart, Grandma."
Oh.
And I put my hands on his hands and I said, "Oh my gosh, I think you are." And the next day after the test, the doctor came in and said, "Well, your heart has started to heal." And I said, "Yeah, my grandson was here and I think he healed my heart." Now to this day, the boy's 5 now, but he will push water on me. I mean, he'll say, "Hey, are you going on a drive? What are you taking your water? You know, I'm your healer, you know." He sees me, he just takes care of me like I don't know, but I know I love him so much, and I know that the love he has for me is what helped me get through that really bad time. And so I do believe, about love
and how it can. Yeah, I tell you, that's a wonderful story. I'm sorry about your loss, but the recovery from that loss, in part through your grandson. That's a great story, isn't it, Shyla?
Yeah, very powerful, Robin. Thanks for calling in and sharing it. And through such a devastating loss, to have that really simple moment with your grandson, that as you were describing it, the word hope came to mind. And I think that's the hope of love, that through just simple gestures, you know, your grandson just put his hand on your heart and said, "I'm healing your heart." It wasn't anything complicated or complex, but that simple moment of caring and compassion did something for you that allowed your heart to start to heal. And that's really the gift that we, and the opportunity that we have to look for that need, to provide that source of caring for ourselves and others, and can really help with this broken world we live in.
And if you're helping someone else, you're probably going to feel better about it too, yourself.
Absolutely. Generosity is one of the best things we can do for our own well-being.
Let's take another call. Hollis in Verona, it's your turn. Hi, Hollis.
Hi, Larry. Yes, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My significant other had a heart or a stroke at 54 years old, very unexpected. And he was paralyzed on half of his size body. So I was trying to work full time and trying to digest, wow, I didn't see that train coming. And I had neighbors on my street. I live in a cul-de-sac, and I had numerous neighbors. They were bringing me over casseroles and desserts and asked if I needed help. And one of the heartfelt part of it is the one family, he's a principal, and his 3 kids, he made them come up and shovel the snow for the winter, and he would not accept any money. He said, "I'm teaching my kids that this is what you do for neighbors," and it brought back memories. When I was young, we went out and shoveled people's driveways and sidewalks, and we didn't expect anything in return. And it was something I didn't expect, so much pouring of help and if you need anything. And I just think my mom used to say the good old days, and that kind of brought back the good old days to me. So that's my story. I just think helping people really makes you feel like the good old days are still here. There's still compassion. There's still people teaching children to help one another and not expect anything in return.
Holly, thank you so much. Shyla, a comment from you.
Yes, Hollis, that the gift of community, you know, when you describe that, of people offering whatever resource they had, whether it's a shovel or a casserole dish or some words of encouragement, and what a gift. And I think a great reminder to callers to just offer what you can in those times of needs. And we do become increasingly disconnected in our communities of living in our houses in our own little bubble, and we forget to walk out and greet one another and build those kinds of connections that help heal.
Thank you very much, Hollis, for that call. You know, I'm just thinking about this in relationship to your fourth, the people we sometimes spend the most time with are the people we work with. And I'm wondering about extending, you talk about extending more love in your workplace.
Yes, and I'm not talking about romantic love, but more companionship love. And work is often the place we spend the most hours during our week.
With people.
With people. And more employees are feeling like overwhelmed. There's too much work to do. They have too much coming at them, so they're just focused on the task at hand, and they don't have time to interact. But there's been research that looked at when a workplace fosters an emotional climate where there is love, that people do better. There was an interesting survey in 7 different industries, from financial services to real estate, and the results were the same, that when people worked in cultures where they felt free to express affection, tenderness, caring, and compassion from one another, they're more satisfied with their jobs, they felt more committed to the organization, and they were accountable for their performance. And we do see some large corporations really trying to foster this kind of atmosphere where there are break rooms conducive for people getting together, or there's company gatherings where they get together and get to know one another. But we can work alongside somebody for years and not know anything about them, and there's some sadness in that.
Yeah, there is indeed. Well, let's go to Sherry in Wales next. Sherry, hi.
Hello, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I don't have nearly the awe-inspiring comments several of the former callers had, but I'm so happy for this show because I'm a firm believer in talking to people, commenting when you're walking through the parking lot or the neighborhood, and I'm so glad to know that I'm not just the crazy old woman who needs to say hello and make people smile.
Well, it's you and it's me as well, Sherry, and hopefully, and I know a lot of other people too. Comment, Shyla?
Yeah, I love that, Sherry, that looking for those opportunities to say a hi or hello or how's your day or hope things are going well. And again, you just never know when that might make a difference. I'm thinking of a woman that I worked with, and she was really in a big depression and starting to spiral downward. And it was just a random stranger who reached out to her on a bus who said just these simple words, "I hope you're doing okay." And that moment where she put her hand on the shoulder and said those simple words, it reignited something in that client. And she started to get activated and engaged in life and making changes. And it really changed the trajectory. So,
oh, wonderful. Sherry, thank you. Jeannie in Madison, let's go to you next. Hi, Jeannie.
Oh, hi there. How are you?
Great. Appreciate your call. What's on your mind?
I got a couple different stories, but I think I'm going to tell the one about my granddaughter. She was born 2 years ago, and they lived with me until she was 14 months. And I'll tell you, when she moved out, I just grieved. And a couple weeks ago, I told my daughter I hadn't seen her for like 2 weeks, and they don't live that far from me. And I just said, my heart aches. I miss that little girl so much. She's such a beautiful spirit, and she brings so much joy to my world and everybody else who she touches. And so it just, I don't know, connecting with people is just so important. And, you know, somebody mentioned out jogging and saying hi to people along the way. That makes a difference for people.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much, Jeannie. I'm hoping that you get to see that granddaughter a little bit more. And good for you to bring it up, I think, anyway, with the daughter.
Absolutely. You know, to carve out that time for your grandbaby, whether it's in person, or we do live in a time where you can video chat and have connection that way, or even just having photos of loved ones on your desk or in your home, that can also serve as a reminder of the love that you have around you, whether they're alive or deceased.
Yeah. Thank you so much for calling. Well, back to the workplace. Anything else you wanted to comment on relating to the workplace?
Yes, and if we think about going into our workday or our work week, are there opportunities to foster some compassionate care asking somebody how their weekend was, inquiring about a sick child, having some grace when somebody messes up or is running late, you know, trying to refrain from a lot of self-criticism or not self-criticism, but criticism and judgment of others, or maybe just doing a random act of kindness, bringing somebody a little gift or flowers on this cold winter day, or even writing a thank you note for or recognizing good work in somebody. Again, that creates a safe, supportive environment. And if we're feeling more compassionate and love, and we'll have greater well-being and be more productive and satisfied.
So as we look at these whole, so we've had like four different areas here, living life more fully with an open heart. We talked about love for your body. We talked about love into your relationships, extending more love in your workplace. So all those things together, maybe... How do you have some ideas about how we can keep up with these things or keep them in mind?
It's easy to forget, especially after February, you know, leaves and Valentine's Day is over and Heart Awareness Month is in the background. And well, one thinking about is this, does this really resonate and feel like a core value that part of at the end of my life, this is something that I want to be part of my legacy, that I left people feeling good and they remember warmth when they think about me. And then I often like to just have people plan an activity or two or a simple thing that they do each month or each week. What's one act of kindness you can do? What's one self-love activity I can do for myself? What's one thing I can do to have better kindness for my body? And then take action. And sometimes it's nice to have an accountability buddy, like in the workplace mm-hmm. or with your spouse or with your kids around the dinner table. And lastly, sometimes if we remember that we're doing it for something larger than ourselves, like parents were modeling it for our kids or grandparents are modeling it for their grandchildren. And the youth today, they notice what we're doing. They learn by what we're doing, not by what we're saying. So, you know, we can encourage them to participate as well.
So, you know, increasing love in your life, the long-term effects of that can be, obviously, I think, pretty positive.
Very positive. A life well lived.
Well, Shyla, it is always a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming by. You're coming back in May.
I am.
Around the time of my birthday, actually, about a week after. So that'll be a good time. You can wish me happy birthday then.
Great.
Belatedly, and we'll talk about another topic.
Sounds wonderful.
Along these lines. Thank you so much for being with us today. Shyla Mergane, distinguished psychologist and clinical assistant professor in the Department of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation. She works out of the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health, and specializes a lot in mind-body medicine to treat all kinds of issues. And we'll definitely be talking with her again on May 21st. We're going to switch gears a little bit. There's one way that you can increase your feelings of goodwill, I think, and personal good fortune is to do a little traveling, maybe eating a little good food while you're on that trip. And there's a way now that you can combine travel and food and in a more specific way. There's a World Food Travel Association that says 93% of travelers say food and drink are prime motivators for travel. We'll talk about that next on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mehler.